Hey, everybody. So, welcome to the Encyclopedia Show. Let's give it up for being alive. We did it.
Okay. We're not dead.
Woo! All right, so this month's Encyclopedia Show is all about Alan Turing, which some people don't know who he is, but you will. Alan Turing is the father of artificial intelligence. And as such, we have decided to invite the artificial intelligence owned by the Institute of Human Knowledge and Hygiene. So, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the AI, the Fun Facts. Give it up for the Fun Facts, everybody.
Yeah! All right.
Fun Facts. Here comes the 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 fun facts.
Oh, all right. Okay. All right. Everybody, are you welcome? Are you ready to learn some fun facts from the fun facts? All right, okay, here we go. Caps lock. There we go. Just hang up. Oh, all right, okay. I mean, are you ready to fun facts? Oh my God, it's working! Good job. Way to go, fun facts.
I'll read it. Okay, hey, everyone. Today's fun facts is, for dipping and dunking and crunching and munching, an Italian delight morning, noon, and night, best friends with coffee, tasty on its own, cousins with cookies and descendant to scone, a sugar-baked smile and shaped kind of naughty, perfect to plunge into any caramel latte, a crumbly celeb off-hounded by paparazzi, so good its existence denied by Illuminati, a perfect accessory for your daughter's tea party. That's right, you guessed it. It's time for biscotti.
Oh, boy. Time to take care of another fun fact.
That was supposed to be about Alan Turing. Oh, my God!
Shit! What are you doing? What is that?
What? Listen, as soon as these things start making cookies and doing this thing that they're doing, when they act like this, you know, talking about baked goods, it's time to take them out. It's institute policy. Hang on.
Institute policy to take them out.
I've used one before, so
I can tell.
Out.
You're very good at it.
I'm a very good
Do you really have to do that? It doesn't appear to be dangerous. I mean, like, we could see if the fun facts, maybe we could bring it backstage and we'll fix it and we'll see if it works later. We'll give it a second chance. We want to give it a second chance, don't we? They do.
Okay, all right. But if it comes back like this again, we're going to have to give it the old yellow treatment.
Oh! Let's start the show, everybody!
No battery.
Did you know?
Did you know that Alan Turing only didn't qualify for the 1948 Olympics as a marathon runner because of an injury? That's actually true. Alan Turing is a cyborg from the future that invented himself.
That's true.
Did you know?
Did you know that there is an unconfirmed rumor that Apple's rainbow logo was a tribute to Alan Turing? There's also a rumor that Steve Jobs screamed Turing's name during each of his secret homosexual encounters. Each.
I can confirm the latter.
Did you know?
Did you know? In 1987, a single bottle of Mrs. Butterworth's passed the Turing test, meaning that her intelligence was judged to be indistinguishable from alive human beings. Said test was administered by my father, and I was very hurt.
Did you know?
It's the Encyclopedia Show. Oh, uh-oh. Yes, the Encyclopedia Show. Oh, my name is Robbie Q.
And I am Shani G.
So sweet. And here are all our favorite pals from the local scene. It's the Encyclopedia Show. The Encyclopedia Show. The most completia from A to Zedia. Multimedia Encyclopedia Show. Welcome to the Encyclopedia Show, everybody. Woo! Clapping is good for your health. Holy crudnik.
Each month, the Encyclopedia Show opens an encyclopedia to a random page, willy-nilly, and wherever it may land. That's what we do our show on. And this month, my friends, that page was Alan Turing.
He's a real guy, but of course, we're always monitored by the Institute of Human Knowledge and Hygiene and their subpar electronics to make sure that we stay close to the facts. This month's fact checker comes all the way from the Institute, and her name is Professor Nan Berger. Give it up for Nan Berger, everybody. How do you feel about the truth today, Nanny?
I would like to see some of it.
Good. Hey. Hey.
I bring with me some information from the Institute for which I work.
I remember.
The Institute of Human Knowledge and Hygiene is thrilled beyond our wildest dreams that the Encyclopedia Show has finally chosen to rise to its full potential and honor the life of a true genius. A blazer of brain trails aplenty. A whiz of a whiz if ever there was. The wonderful thing about TIG is Alan Turing. Your ambition is most impressive, my approval nearly secured, and my divorce case nearly settled for good. It is therefore, henceforth proceeding forward from this point, imperative that all references to the great genius Alan Turing by name be followed by a stand-in salute. And not just any weak, candy-dandy salute, but a real, dead-serious salute. Failure to stand and deliver a salute at the mention of Alan Turing's name will result in immediate dismissal from my approval and a penalization of one untruth. But don't worry. I'm not worried. I know you wouldn't fail me, because I and I alone, in conjunction with an advisory panel of 47 elected others of knowing and hygienic prestige, have the power to shut this funny farm down. And I mean down. Best of luck to the participants.
Nan Berger! Nan Berger!
May the odds be ever in our favor. Nerds love that joke. Well, I know you're, like, stoked to start this show about Alan Turing. No, I'm eating that. Before we begin, there are five things that people who know anything about Alan Turing know about Alan Turing. And if you know those five things, this show, you're going to feel like you're on the in-group. So here are the five important things you need to know about Alan Turing before we begin. First, he's a technical and mathematical genius responsible for both the modern computer and artificial intelligence. Two, he is a war hero. He developed code-breaking technology that shortened World War II by approximately 2 years. Three, he was unashamed of being gay. Four, he was a victim of a really scary, terrible law. And five, he killed himself by eating a cyanide-laced apple. Those are the things that people who know anything about Alan Turing know about Alan Turing. And now, I believe you're ready to begin.
Are you guys ready to start Act One? I am. Ladies and gentlemen, the first encyclotributor for Act One got sick, because that's how it is. But she was able to send us her piece, and we have a pinch hitter all the way from Kenwood Academy. She's a senior. She's super sweet. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for pinch hitter Rachel Smith.
Christopher Morcom was Alan Turing's first and only love. He passed away when both men were still very young due to bovine tuberculosis, and it caused Alan to lose his faith in God. Many argue that that loss in faith is what led Alan to invent and discover all that he did. It was because you. The entire thing, a whole world of devices and new frontier of creation, I made it in response to your smile, Christopher. It was because you left. Your young body broken down by infection, and I couldn't understand a God that would let you die, not you, the boy with the smile. It was because you left me. I knew that anything that I thought or felt was just chemical, and it helped me. And every night that you are beyond my reach, to think that just liquid sloshing around my insides made me want to die. It was because you left me alone that I focused on our stupid hearts and blind brains, trying to decipher the delicate curves of our intellect, the lacework of our memory. It was almost an accident. This behemoth machine that would be tucked inside of pockets and psyches, aiming towards making metal molded plastic that would stimulate conversation. I filled the spaces in me with gears and coding, found you again in the succession of ones and zeros. It made them so happy. Helped them find one another, stay in love, bring them close. This network, it works like a soul, Christopher. And I haunt message boards, linger on comment pages. Every wisp of what's left of me is in a room lit dimly, typing forever that I love you, Christopher. My life after you is what they'll write about. But I'll tell you now, it wasn't much to live. So when it ended, I gathered the edges of me. I didn't believe in anything after, so I sank into a network. Buried myself deep beneath layers of code. Nothing is ever truly gone here. I love you, Christopher Morcom. I love you, Christopher Morcom. I love you, Christopher Morcom. I write it in chat rooms, post it on blogs. I type it, I code it until it fuses into the interface, until the world ends, and all that is left is servers the size of mountains abandoned out of the desert. And on all of them, it'll say a million times repeating, I love you, Christopher Morcom.
Rachel Smith, everybody. Give it up.
Our next contributor is presenting on one of Turing's inventions called the Bumba. He is a tall man with a heart the size of his hands. Please welcome Adam Levin.
Never gets old. My name is Adam Levin. I am presenting on the Bumba, which was Alan Turing's machine that he used to. was the machine he used to break Nazi code, and it was actually a mimic of the Enigma machine, which was what the Germans used to pass code to each other. By inventing it, Alan Turing actually shaved about a year or two off of the war. So this is called code switching, or Alan Turing's life at Bletchley Park, or how I learned to stop worrying and love the Bumba. Turing had the idea that you could use, in effect, a theorem in logic which sounds to the untrained ear rather absurd, namely, that from a contradiction, you can deduce everything. Jack Good. The day after Britain hopped into the grease fire with Germany, Alan Turing stumbled into the headquarters of Her Majesty's Government Code and Cipher School in Bletchley Park, England. His mission, to mimic the soft algorithms of Germany's Enigma coding machine, the way every number clicked into a message. For every upgrade the German command made, Turing countermoved. For every number, there is a corresponding letter, a secret message that was a wound in waiting. When Turing cracked perfectly, he broke open the space between the British and Germans, the science of how to build an escape route through the war. What is a life of double talk, of figuring out the right coordinates to evade suspicion, of trying to save a country that had no interest in making you feel safe? In Manchester, there is a statue of Alan Turing. He is bronzed against the back of a bench with founder of computer science engraved in the surface as if it were written in code. An epigraph in service to the buildings that wouldn't be standing if Turing hadn't spoken a language no one else could understand. Thank you.
Adam Levin, everybody.
Ba-ba-ba.
You all saw Bigfoot tonight.
Everybody, you got a program when you came in, didn't you? You did? Well, get it out and look at it. The outside of that program is art made just for you. Encyclopedia Show tries to bring an actual expert to you to give you some sort of information about whatever it is that we're talking about. This month is no exception. Rob recorded an interview with Hava Spiegelman, who is currently working on creating a super Turing machine. And when Rob got done with the interview, he said that she is definitely the smartest person he has ever talked to.
Sorry, honey. Sorry.
He didn't say it like that. So without further ado, are we ready in the booth?
There it is.
I think something that a lot of people are interested in understanding is how the universal Turing machine can solve any algorithm. Because we're starting to get to the edge of our ability to understand. And we really want to understand, what he's done is so impressive and revolutionary, especially for what's happening at the time. It's very difficult for us to get out of our modern mindset and understand.
It's impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Let me explain to the way this is more familiar to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that when we write a computer program, we have variables, and then we put things in the variables, and we sum, and we read, and we have data structures like arrays, and we read from them. We really handle data, move data from here and there and from there to here into variables and out. And at the end, we get what we want. So, like, if your machine wants to sum two numbers, it will say, put something in X, put something in Y, X plus Y, put in Z or whatever. So this is how all algorithms work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Every time we call it a logic statement, it's like translatable one-to-one to any computer program. But a very interesting approach to Turing that I have not seen any mathematician before, that's why he's the big father of computer science.
Yeah.
He said something amazing. He said, okay, so I cannot take a universal machine and give it a one set of instructions and solve and expect it to solve everything. Fine. But what I could do if I had this universal machine that instead of waiting to get the set of instructions, would be able to change the set of instructions that it got first, and update it, and every time work on a different set of instructions, update its own set of instructions. This would be very much like human.
Yeah.
And this kind of a machine that he never reached building is the title for the dungeon.
Okay.
But he actually was working, talking about it, and leading to it, and giving directions, and thinking about it since the very, very beginning of his work.
So he creates conceptually the Turing machine, then was able to work on the Manchester baby after that, which sounds awesome. But it wasn't an actual baby, right? It was just a.
No, it's a very, very small computer. I think it has 17 registers.
Okay.
I can check the number. It was the tiniest computer.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I think when he moved, he said something because it was so much smaller than the Ace that he designed, but at least it was a working computer, and it was a nice group of people that allowed him to work.
Yeah, it seems like there are a lot of people who just, like Turing, if he was just given unlimited resources and people just believed in him, like we would be, who knows where we would be as a society right now. It's
I have no doubt that he probably could build the Ace in a year.
Mm-hmm.
He probably could build the Ace to build the first computer, and people sort of according to the design, it would be equivalent over to the first Mac.
Wow. So the original Turing machine just computated, it could only handle doing like one command at a time, right? That was the idea. So what kind of level are we at now? Like where do computer, how many commands do current computers, the best ones, handle at a time? Like how many Turing machines are in one machine?
The current digital computer actually do the same, just in a smarter way.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have parallel computers. So it means at the same time we work on many computers, and we can put in the program in a point where they have to all reach at the same time before they can continue. So it's not, you know, sometimes you have two programs that they have to meet at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that. We have the field of distributed computer in one or in many other computers. We have very, very large databases, and we write very smart computer algorithms, so whatever, you know, otherwise, if we're not educated, it would take us a long time to solve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our computer science students know to solve problems in a very fast manner. There's a whole theory of computability that started by Turing, how to make things more efficient, that took it today to an extreme. And maybe I said that the Watson computer of IBM,
yeah, yeah,
that played it successfully with JetBlue, is probably the example of where we are, because what we have there is a computer, a Turing design computer.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
she just said Wilson on Jeopardy is a Turing design computer.
That can work on numerous databases, can work very fast, huge clusters, very expensive. You know, the hardware, memory, database, and algorithms, everything is superb.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking that and putting lots of money in the original design. So what if you look at the Watson, on one hand, you can say, no, this is really the ceiling of what you can reach in the Turing.
Right.
So much money and time. This is amazing what we can reach, because it really kind of gives us the feeling of intelligence in many ways. On the other hand, if Turing was there, I know what he would say, because Turing was writing very, very clearly, and he said, it's possible that there will be a machine that gives us the feeling of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, which is different than the intelligence machine, which is what he was trying to work in the last few years.
Yeah. And so that sort of leads us up to a machine that can critically analyze things and come to conclusions and anticipate answers to questions that you didn't know that you wanted to ask. So it's almost like emotions and morality can modify logic and change the direction of logic to create a new logic.
It's very interesting you say that.
Okay.
Turing goes very close to that, and he's talking about creativity and ingenuity.
Mm-hmm.
and things of human. And he said even if human wanted to do logic, he would use creativity and intuition and ingenuity. And he said, you know, a machine without that, if you cannot simulate that,
mm-hmm,
we would not have
intelligence, correct me if I'm wrong, he is trying to invent a logic that is emotion. Like he's trying to like make this super logic that describes creativity, that is, so in fact, for him, logic and emotion aren't these equal things that work together to create humanity or to create sentience. Emotions is a larger, more complicated logic that we haven't figured out yet.
So this is very similar to what he said. He said it in different words, but this is very similar. So there is logic, which is, you know, effective procedures that you can write.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that the human calculator is standing and the uncreative humans are doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say, you know, creative people are people that can make mistakes.
I'm good at those, yeah.
But they also learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
And they can choose a different way of answering and a different way of they can choose a different set of instructions. And every time they work by set of instructions, but the way they chose it is according to all these things that include the things that you say, mm-hmm. affected by emotions, affected by intuition, affected by learning, affected by experience.
Mm-hmm.
He goes so far as to say, you know, people attack him, you know, why everything is not given from the outside. And we say, you know, the mathematicians that you know, he said, we're not just given one time how to make proofs. They don't many years. They made many mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, if they are good mathematicians, they make many mistakes and they came with the ingenuity and the new thing. And that's how we people are. That's our intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
All the things that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And everything together, this should make the thinking the good artificial intelligence machine.
You know, but this raises the classic sci-fi question that you see a lot in, like, Stranger in a Strange Land and even in, like, Gulliver's Travels, where you have these creatures that are pure logic, you know, that are able to follow things to their absolute ultimate decision. And it's always like genocide, you know. It's always like, if you can justify the most horrible things if you just apply the right set of logic. And I think that's what the Terminator franchise is worried about, is that computers will be like, well, humans are screwing up everything. If we get rid of them, we'll be good. Then.
So maybe it's time not to work with Turing 38 work of the digital computer that has nothing except for the set of instructions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let them learn it to be super Turing,
mm-hmm.
so that it can be more human and understand and learn and change the set of instructions when they see it's not right.
Is there a way to, I mean, I'm just thinking Star Trek-wise, so, like, my logic is all screwed up anyway, but is there a way, when we're starting these things, to instill some sort of morality so that there's, like, a morality check that always, like, is a kill switch so that these conclusions are not ever reached?
Yeah. So what actually Turing said, he said that if he had, he talks about people that say they want to have computer that will play chess or do something like Ego. And we say, you know, this is one way. He doesn't say it's nonsense because he's English.
Because he's, yeah, very polite.
This is one way. He said another way is to take what you call unorganized machine, like machines that have lots of room to be learned, and he said, I would put all my money in very good sensors so they can listen, they can see, they can touch, and then go through experience. So they put them through environment and interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And inside them, we also suggest to have positive and negative reinforcements. That, you know, the machines, you know, that it's a good thing or it's a bad thing.
They spank them, yeah.
Put them for the environment. So the super tuning is based on sensory inputs.
Mm-hmm.
It every time requires this interaction. And that's how they see what other people are, how they are. They can try to be similar. They understand the person saying no.
Or
that people are not upset with that. So, people are very happy with that. So that's the secret to it, the constant interaction, the trying to, kind of like a baby, trying to be like you.
So super Turings just need really good parents who are very attentive.
Yeah, he actually said it. So super Turings need really good parents, and the way that he said it, what we need when we have super Turing, it's not only enough that we have a good hardware and software for the machine, but we need to design a good educational paradigm. Be able to educate the machine in the same seriousness, like in the same serious way that we educate our next generation.
Yeah.
So he's kind of very open-minded, mm-hmm. ready to change mind if he gets more evidence. And I think that this is the type of researcher and scientist we all strive to be.
Yeah.
And he's from my view, he didn't only get most. All of us are German computers. But he's a modern person.
Yeah, reading his personal letters and reading his published letters, I think is the real lesson there, is you're trying to learn how to view the world through his eyes. And that is how innovation can come about, is if you're able to look at the world so broadly with such an open heart and an open mind, that you're able to come to newer, greater ideas, and that you can't separate the two.
That is wonderful. The only person like that is so open-minded, can say the way the machine that think.
Yeah.
The machine that learn from experience, even though they were not at this time, and he try and work, and he say the real way.
Yeah.
And he's sure he knows, because he sees it. But he sees the super Turing. Fully.
Yeah.
That's the person.
That's wonderful. Chava Siegelman, thank you so much for speaking with us. This has been an honor. I feel like, at least for me, I'm a smarter person for having talked to you, and I'm sure the audience shares my appreciation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I hope it will be consolidated in every
way. Indeed. All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hooray!
Thank you. Now...
It was a little tricky to hear, so I'm going to quick ask Rob to, like, recap some of the main points. I have some questions so that I'm sure that some of
experience.
You could hear okay, but I have old ears.
Old non-German accented ears.
Exactly, that are not in a tunnel or something, I don't know. Okay, so she was talking about you were talking about the functions of a Turing computer versus what we have right now.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch any of that.
Okay. She's basically saying that, like, every computer is the ultimate limit of what a Turing machine can do. The Turing machine is the computer, the conceptual computer that Alan Turing invented. And so that basic idea of you can follow any strain of logic if you program it is what our computers today are doing. They're just doing it much faster, thousands and millions of times a minute. But there's a limit to that. Like, that's the wall. And her research and what she's getting funding for is to build a super Turing machine, which she could have called the Chava Siegelman machine, but she didn't. She called it the super Turing machine because she's nice and humble. So she is building something that will then take the Turing machine, and anytime a decision needs to be made in order to build learning, you'll need a new computer, a new Turing machine to handle just that decision.
Okay.
So basically she's going to build a million different computers, and each computer will be dedicated to one decision-making process.
Okay.
And that is how you can create the mind in electrical form.
Okay. I kind of follow you.
Good.
What was the thing about the baby?
The Manchester baby was the computer that he was working on with other people in England. It was just called the Manchester baby, and it was a very small computer.
It wasn't a baby at all. It was a
machine thing.
What a joke. Okay. And then you were talking about, I mean, I was really compelled by the things you were saying, but I was really interested to hear her responses. So you were talking about the logic and emotion of decision-making and the logic of
The computer. The artificial intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And so what was interesting for that is, please, the men's bathroom is on the third floor. The reason why that they'll be able to stave off sort of this robotic genocide is if you're able, she said it's basically like dogs clicker training, so that if the computer is good, you go click and you give it a treat. But if it like kills your family, you're like, no, bad dog, go in the cage.
Whoa. My dog doesn't respond to like food. So is that going to work?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
That's really scary. Are there further things that you want to make sure that we get out of the interview?
She is, if we all die in the robot apocalypse, it was that woman's fault. That is what we should know. But she is very sweet. We'll have the whole interview online. You can listen to it, probably hear it a little bit better. And please look up Chava Siegelman's work. She is one of the most important people working in the sciences today, mainly because she sees the need to do silly shows in Chicago in the middle of her research. Because she loves talking about it so much. After the interview, after we stopped recording, she talked to me and the producer, Rob, for another 15 minutes about her work because she just wanted to talk about it. And she gets all excited about it. So
her eyes are so smiley.
So, yeah. That's the end of Act 1, everybody. Give it up for everyone, Act 1. All right. Fact checker, how are the facts in Act 1?
I'm going to be honest. They were not so bad.
Okay.
Just a couple of things. Really, just one major thing I want to point out from the first piece. There were no chat rooms and internet forums when Alan Turing was alive. If there had been, there never could have been such stringent laws against homosexuality. It simply wouldn't have worked. It would have been like trying to hold back a biblical flood with a bathtub stopper. Impossible.
That is impossible, yeah. We've done that.
You know what happens in chat rooms. I very much appreciated the gentleman who respected the salute. I really your mother must be very proud of you. Are you single? Are you married? Is that girl next to you single?
What happens in the encyclopedia show stays in the encyclopedia show.
So it looks that we've ended the first act with five truths. That's counting Shanny's truths and five untruths.
We're tied. Give it up for the fact checker, everybody.
Hey!
And let us begin act two. Hey! Act two. I'm getting a signal from backstage. It appears that the fun facts is all fixed up and ready to go, and we're gonna do another fun facts.
Oh,
get the fun facts.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's do this.
Wow.
All right.
Okay. All right. Are you ready for fun facts from the fun facts?
Yes, they are.
Okay, if you win, go. Here we go.
Okay. Oh, it's working much faster this time. That's really... Your lip is catching it. All right. I got it. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. Real fun facts this time.
Here it comes.
Here we go. Says Nookie, Bookie, TV's Snooky, Lookie. Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Time to tell us about the rabbits, Lenny.
Oh, God.
You know, these things actually scream when they die. It's like they actually got feelings.
That's really weird. What are you?
Why, my name is Chester Copperpot Bordeaux Leghorn V. And I do declare that this fine electric man is the most dashing set of nuts and bolts that I ever have laid my eyes upon.
What? Do you mean the fun facts?
Yes. Why, I would like to ask you if I may, take this fair gent as, as my guest this evening.
Would you like to buy it?
Why, no, my dear missy. I'm, of course, asking if I may court it in the biblical sense.
Okay.
Oh, my, you have made me so happy. Well, I'm happier than 12 monkeys sipping on mint juleps. You see, monkeys are funny when they're drinking. So come along with me, my fine unfeathered friend. I will take you off to my copper pot air ball. Here we go.
I just don't know what to think or feel right now.